Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 18th of November, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Google had an outage Wednesday that left users trying to get at Google Docs files with a trying to connect error and a lot of anger. Twitter lit up Wednesday afternoon with tweets from various frustrated word slingers pulling their hair out over the outage. Website downdetector.com said Docs had been having issues since about 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is 11 a.m. in the 12 a.m. in the real world, noon. And the site's what?
PM.
12 p.m., right. And the site's live outage map showed a number of major metropolitan areas in the U.S. had been affected. And like Twitter, Down Detector's comment section was rife with complaints. Well, this is pissing me off, Red One. I can see what's in my drive, but it won't open any of the documents unless I have the Chrome offline version. 502, that's an error, Red Another. The server encountered a temporary error and could not complete your request. Please try again in 30 seconds. That's all we know. Google confirmed the situation at 3:48 p.m. Eastern Time with a post on its G Suite status dashboard and said it would provide more info shortly. We are aware of a problem with Google Docs affecting a significant subset of users. The affected users are unable to access Google Docs. At 4:55, that significant subset being all of them, I think. At 4:55 p.m. Eastern Time, it said folks had regained access and that a larger fix would be in place soon. Google Docs service has already been restored for some users. We expect a resolution for all users in the near future. At 5:10, Google said the issue was resolved. We apologize for the inconvenience and thank you for your patience and continued support. Please rest assured that system reliability is a top priority at Google, and we are making continuous improvements to make our systems better. It's not the first time an outage has jeopardized your chance of achieving immortality with that great American novel. September and January also saw issues. Some users got locked out of documents in October as well. Users will forgive one or two small glitches, but when you hit three or four, it becomes cause for concern. One user tweeted, "What if we'd had an important presentation to give? It could have cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars." Of course, this is why we here at Soundbites recommend using Google's offline mode, as well as regularly availing yourself of Google Takeout. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remember, is Google Docs ate your homework again. And your choices are, I was forced to talk to people. It was a nightmare. And it was annoying, but no biggie. And I hardly noticed. And verily, my quill's inkwell did run dry. And goo-hoo now? So far, we've got about 20 people who have voted, and I hardly noticed is number one, followed by, of course, goo-hoo now.
Yeah.
And, of course, I know you'll have more to say about this. If you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, the very first choice is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and currently, at least, the first item in the poll discussion is 18 November 17, Google Docs ate your homework again. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Isn't that a lot of the same excuses we heard last week after the Level 3 outage?
Yes.
It's almost like they recycled
the word for word. Yeah, they just reprinted it.
But this is actually really unusual. Google hardly ever goes down.
That's very true. They have multiple numbers of servers. Somebody, we still don't know why, but it's probably going to be the same reason as well. Somebody fat-fingered something.
And was it a Google problem or was it Google's ISP problem?
Oh, no, it was Google because I was hit by it. I was trying to write something and I couldn't. Google Docs was down, but Google Sheets was up and Google Presentations was up and Google Forms was up. You all right there? Gavin, did you do that a little farther over?
I don't know if the camera was pointed at me, but I think it is.
I'm pretty sure it is, yes. Especially the smile on his face.
There it is. He's doing it. If you're not watching the stream, let's just say you're missing out.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. No, if you're not missing the stream, congratulations. So it was a lot of things that were causing the issue. There were a lot of things that were working, and the issue was only with Google Docs. So I'm pretty sure it was somebody did something wrong with some Google Docs specific code.
Yeah, at least you're not talking, long outage. Yeah, right. It's better that they be proactive in, locking it down, making sure nothing happens, because they want you to be able to trust your documents and everything else up there. So it's better to err on the side of caution. Sorry. So what? I'm inconvenienced for a couple hours.
Well, it depends on how you're inconvenienced as well. I mean, I was actually working during the time that was happening, and I noticed that I was now working in offline mode.
Mm-hmm.
So my first thought, of course, is I look at my Greenlight router, and it was up fine. It was fine. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at that. It was up fine. Then I went to a different thing to see if my machine was still online. It was.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried opening a spreadsheet, and it opened fine. And then I opened a presentation, opened fine. Then I tried to open another document, and it wouldn't open it. Yeah. So now I knew where the problem actually was.
Yeah.
But the documents that I had, A, already open, and B, in offline mode, still all open fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out, for me, that worked out fine.
Yeah.
But for many people I know, it was a bit of a pain. And, a couple hours over X number of years is not terribly bad, really.
Well, here's the thing, though. The way they've got to be so cautious in protecting our information, because we're entrusting it to them up there on the cloud. So, they're going to do big-time due diligence to make sure everything up there is safe. And I'd rather have them err on the side of caution than saying, don't worry about it.
Right. And, every system administrator strives for 5 nines of uptime.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many nines do they have now?
Right. That would be 99.999%. And they, clearly over, 10 years, a few hours, still definitely is 5 nines of uptime, no question. Google does have a dashboard which you can go to.
Google Calendar had a problem the other day, too.
Yeah, it did. I noticed that.
Calendar, Hangouts, and Plus. Nobody noticed Hangouts and Plus not working.
Now. Now. But it was a tough problem for the people who use, and a lot of people, lots of schools do that as well. There you go. Lots of schools do that as well. They have, they've given, universities in particular, have given their students the Google Suite. And faculty are now saying, do everything in Google Docs, Google Sheets, and then share it with me so that I can see your work. Then they don't have to print it out, and they don't have to do anything they want. They don't have to do anything they don't want. They can look at it at their tablets or whatever. It's all good. But if, in fact, you're, as you may have heard, one or two students a year wait until the last minute to do their work. I've heard that. I don't know that it's true, but I've heard that.
I think the percentages might be a little
higher. Maybe,
just,
maybe.
Just
maybe,
a wee bit.
Maybe. But if in fact this had happened during exam time, or rather during the time when students are writing their final papers, that would have been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I back in the day when,
But still, though, if they're still, doing it even offline, you know, and saving it offline. You can't trust, you know, like we've preached right along. Backup, backup, backup.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, one of the things that you want to make sure you do is to have offline mode set up. And that's easy to do. If you just go to drive.google.com and in the upper right corner is that little gear icon. If you click that, you can go into settings. And I think it's the third setting down. Yep, the fourth setting down, actually. Is a section called Offline. And it says sync Google Docs, Sheets, Slides, and Drawings files to this computer so you can edit offline. Obviously, it's not recommended on public or shared computers, but if you have your own private machine at home or your own private laptop, check that. And then as you open documents, they will be synced onto your local hard drive so that if something like this happens, you can still open them and work with them as if you were online. And then, oh, by the way, when the problem gets fixed and you're back online, they will automatically in the background be updated with no problem. So you want to be sure that you've turned on offline. It's just called offline, and make sure that gets done, and you'll be happy to go. There you go. Pretty simple. All right, to the phones. We got a couple minutes. Our first caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good morning, guys. I got a letter. I get promotions once in a while. I used to be a Frontier customer quite a few years back.
Yeah?
And I was wondering if anybody knew when Frontier did these upgrades, they're offering speeds up to 115 megabits, and they have a promotion for like 45.
Hold on. You've got the delay in our headphones. I can't understand anything that's going on. You pushed a button and the delay started.
Yeah, and
that second technical red light over there in the top.
Yeah, this is off air.
Yeah, we're being overdriven, and I can't hear the caller.
Now you just turned it back on again.
All right. Yeah, hang on a minute, Mark.
We can't.
Yeah.
Turn that button off, that one in the upper right.
No, you can't. You're either in program or you're on air.
Yeah. All right, so.
Okay, all I'm telling you is.
All right, now we're good.
I have to take the headphones off because I'm hearing myself 8 seconds later. So here's the thing. I'm sorry, Mark. We didn't get your question, and I cannot give you an answer because we didn't hear your question because now suddenly we're in delay.
Now it's live.
Is it live again?
It's live,
now?
But it's echoey.
I don't mind echoey as long as it's live. Are we back? Yeah, that's good.
Okay, now.
Okay,
can
Mark.
Can we bring Mark back up and see if he works?
Mark, are you still there?
Yes.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. I said I used to be a Frontier customer years ago.
Yeah.
And I still get promotions in the mail, and I was wondering if you could tell me when they up their speeds. They're promoting speeds up to 115 megabits per second with a deal they gave me in the mail for like 45 megabits for like $45 a month.
One thing Frontier has been doing is the regular DSL line gets you about 8 megabits. Maximum. We hardly ever saw that ourselves when we had Frontier. So what they do is they bond them together. They give you two lines, you get 16. They give you three lines, four lines, and more. Also, they do have fiber capability in some areas, not very many, to give you more plans than that. So you might want to see how many lines that causes.
Yeah, they also have something called Vantage Internet Simply Velocity. Hang on for a second. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with everybody plus Mark.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Mark from Greece on the line, I hope. Do we, Mark?
Yep. I'm still here.
Okay, tearing them up. Yeah, what we think has happened, Frontier has been buying a lot of the old Verizon landline service, including some of their Fios cities. So that's probably where they're offering the 115. I just tried to, so they're calling it their Vantage Internet Simply Velocity, to be as fast as 115 megabit. What we're seeing though is when I said the order online, I can get 6, 12, or 24. And so 6 megabit with one phone line, 12 megabit with two phone lines, and 24 megabit with four phone lines. And on their velocity, that it does say select areas only. So apparently Rochester is not one of their select areas. So I'm guessing it's where they purchase some of the faster Verizon services in other cities.
Okay. Yeah, they gave me a promotion in the mail for 45.
And then that is probably just a global mailing, so if you call them up and try to get it, they may not be able to offer it to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I'm just curious. Because
it certainly can't hurt to give them a call.
Right, right, yeah. And they're not, they say no phone commitment. They don't even have to have their phone service.
Yeah, naked DSL, they say sometimes call that.
They just, of course, they give you that two-year commitment that you have to be a customer.
Right.
I don't have to commit to their phone.
Yep.
So I found that interesting also.
Nice. That is nice. That's
although
a nice.
If you do commit to the phone, you sometimes get a lower bundle deal. Instead of paying for both of them separately, if you buy them together, you get a lower bundle.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's what I was curious about. Because I know last time I had, it was very slow.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So, but yeah, it looks like in my area, what I can see here, I am eligible for 45.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah, I knew I always had what they gave me. I always was at their speed. I guess I must have been very close to their, what they call their office.
Right, the central office.
Yeah. So, okay, well, thank you for the information.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
It's interesting they don't publicize that more. To let more people know. So I go to the regular Frontier page, and their maximum broadband is 6 megabit.
Yeah.
That's max. Or I can go to Ultra, is 12 megabit with two phone lines. They bond the two lines together to give you 12.
Right, right, right.
And so we had to Google that. Because I'm in Rochester. I bet if I switch my location to a different city, I'll get the other
office. I have Fairport, and I could see it.
Yeah, I did. I Googled Frontier Velocity and found it. And then when I say order online and put in my address, it says, "Oh, we can give you 6."
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Webster, New York. What's up, Ken?
Hello, gentlemen. There's something I want to do, and I think it's doable. But at the same time, I don't want to make a mistake, so I'm going to ask the pros. At one of my computer stations, I have two machines there. One's a Chromebox, one's a Microsoft product. What I'd like to do is buy a cloud-ready printer and configure that, which I've never done before, to the Chromebox.
Uh-huh.
And then I would like, because it has a USB port, I would like to configure that side of it so I can hook it up to my Microsoft product and go from one to the other when I want to. Is that doable?
Some printers don't allow you to use multiple interfaces at the same time.
Well, I don't want to use them at the same time.
Well, if you set it up as a network printer, then the Windows machine will see it as a network printer, and the Chromebox will see it as a network cloud printer. So you won't need USB.
So, well, I know I've looked at the setup, and the setup gives you both options.
Yeah.
But I guess what you're saying to me, it's not doable.
Well, it
yes, it is doable.
It is doable, but you might have to unplug USB to use Ethernet, plug Ethernet in to use USB.
It's doable if you give up this whole idea of USB.
Okay.
So here's the deal. You would use something called Google Cloud Print to print from the Chromebox. And you have to buy a printer that is Google Cloud Print ready.
Right.
Okay. That also works with Word.
Windows.
Windows, in general. Windows can also download the Google Cloud Printer, which adds the cloud print options to your regular desktop printing options. So you can make that your default printer as well on the Google, on the Windows side, and use the same printer through the same interface with both.
And that interface would be either Ethernet or Wi-Fi to your network.
See, what I do is, like the Chromebox down there right now is not wired up at all. And it may stay that way for a month. And now I want to go to the Windows machine. So I have some connection changes to be made. Would that be probably necessary, too, with the printer?
Are you saying that you do not have wireless in your house?
Yes, I do.
Then you won't need to make
hold on. Let me back up a second and understand this. You have wireless in your house, but you're not using it for the Chromebox.
I'm using an Ethernet cable for the Microsoft product. Isn't that right, Patty? Yes.
Okay.
But the Chromebook in the house and the Chromebox in the house is wireless.
Okay. So the Microsoft box, is that a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
Does it have wireless capability?
Yes. Yes, it does.
All right. Then you would also turn on the wireless, which means you'll get slightly faster speed because now it's a duplexing. But you also, and now what you do is you set up the printer to do Google Cloud printing. Then you connect both the Chrome box and the Windows box to the Google Cloud printing, and you're done.
And you won't need to change any connections because your printer is going to be a network printer for both and all your computers.
So that's the simple version. It ends up being a network printer for both vehicles.
Yes.
Right, for any vehicle in your home that's on your network and has cloud printing drivers enabled.
Okay.
And that's the easiest way to do it. I mean, you can keep changing cords and plugs and rebooting and why?
Yep.
Okay.
Right? Yep. So, yeah, set it up as a network printer. That makes it the easiest.
Yeah, I just hope I can get through all the rigmarole and doing all that. But
One of the things that can make it easier is if the printer has a screen on it.
Yes, it does.
You can do there's a wireless wizard in the printer to join your Wi-Fi network. Some of the less expensive printers don't have a screen, so you do have to connect it USB to your computer. Then you tell it to be wireless, and that's always annoying.
Right.
But that's because there's no screen. With a screen, tell your printer to be a network printer. Join the Wi-Fi.
Right. And if your printer has it built in, you can join you can become a Google Cloud printer without anything other than the printer itself. If it does not have that, then you have to connect the Windows machine, again, wirelessly to the printer and then run the Google Cloud print software on the Windows machine, and then it will act as the print box to the printer.
One last thing, and I don't want to discuss it because I don't want to take too much time, but I heard the conversation last year about the update to the Chromebook regarding using Android apps.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you this feedback. Nick, are you sure that your Chromebook is out of the queue? Because you probably know this. There are sites you can go to that actually tells you which one are in the beta mode, so on and so forth.
Yes, yes.
There's
and
a whole list
of those sites, and mine are too old.
Okay. Well, the unit that we're using came from Walmart. It's an Acer. I bought it in February of this year, and my wife just got the update about a month ago when she turned it on.
Yep.
In fact, the last three numbers in the model number were 532, and my brother-in-law's got 531. That one hasn't come through yet, but it's in the plan stage.
Right. They're working their way.
Has not come through yet, but that's in the planning stage, too.
Right. Mine are all too old. I'm going to buy a new one anyway because I'm at the...
Yeah, mine's in the planning stage also.
Yeah, yours is in the planning stage.
Nick, you should kick somebody you know where to come up with a book. It's got all the bells and whistles that you want.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they have them. They're just very expensive.
Yeah, I know. Well, you guys, don't eat too much bird. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's there's a lot of confusion as to which Chromebooks are going to be doing what to whom. One thing I do want to say, however, is it's probably not too early for us to start talking about things you could get your significant others for Christmas. And one of those things you could think about is a Chromebook. They are not terribly expensive. They are insanely useful, particularly if you already have a desktop that does everything you want to do, but you still want something to carry around and like that. The Chromebook is excellent for that. It does enough that you're going to be happy with it. For most people, it'll do about 99.999%. That's not smart.
We're trying to reboot something here.
Yeah, he's trying to do something somewhere. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. It'll do about 99.99% of what people want to do. If you're a high-end game player or you're actually writing lots and lots of code all the time, it's probably not the device for you. But for everybody else, it's probably enough. It's probably as much as you'll need. I truly do everything except coding on my Chromebook. And I only don't do coding because I've got so many tools on hand on my Linux desktop that I just can't, I don't want to relearn it. And I don't have to. So, but in general, the reality is that there's no reason not to take a look at a Chromebook. And when you can get them in $200-$300 range, they make pretty decent, Christmas gifts, don't you think?
Yep.
There are lots of others that we can talk about as we go through the day, but I thought that we should probably start now talking about Christmas gifts.
And Hanukkah's early this year.
In general, that's how that should go. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Webster, New York. Joe, what's up?
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I have a dilemma related to Windows, so I'm going to jog you away from the Google line, if you don't mind. I bought a Dell desktop last December, and after 2 months, the motherboard failed. I had to send it back because it was still under warranty, and I had not purchased Office 2016 from them at the time, and I bought it online from supposedly a third-party certified reseller. What ended up happening is all they loaded was Windows 10 and sent it back. And the saga continued after that because when I tried to automatically load back using the product key code for Office 2016, that the message popped up, that's not a valid key code. So I went back to Microsoft, and lo and behold, the third-party seller had sold me a limited license for use version, so it was no longer valid. At least that's what I understand today.
Yep.
So I can't, the crux of the problem is I can't take a security update for Windows 10 because it fails and it says UEFI unsupported disk layout or firmware problem. Now, the dilemma is I don't know the product key code. To make a long story, just a little longer, Microsoft, as a courtesy, loaded me up with a 2016 version. But I don't know the product key code. So I think I'm in a skunk hole here.
Could you read that error message again, please?
It's called, the long definition of it is unsupported disk layout problem, UEFI failure. Fail to install right. because of a UEFI failure. And my options seem to be start all over again, back up all your files, and reload Windows 10. I can take some Windows 10 upgrades. The ones who fail are the version 1703, 1709.
But right. Hold on, we got to take a break. But we'll be right back to you in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, as well as, of course, Joe from Webster. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Joe from Webster on the line. You still there, Joe?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay, here's the deal. There are two ways that Windows can be installed on a computer. The old way is with a master boot record. We're all familiar with those from decades of hearing about them, whether or not we use them or not. The other is with something called EUFI. Those are basically incompatible.
Isn't that more the BIOS than the boot system?
Right. So it's one of two things. Either your BIOS is set incorrectly, or the people at Dell who reinstalled your software did it the wrong way. Now, honestly, over the phone, I cannot begin to tell you how to... We'd be here for the next 4 days. If you take it to a reputable dealer and let them take a look at it, they should be able to figure out what the deal is. But unfortunately, that's not something I can easily... Any of us can easily handle over the phone. I'm sorry.
But I have a feeling that in either case, it's going to take an erase and reinstall.
It might, but we can't be sure. Can't be sure until we're looking at it.
Back up your data just in case.
Right. Definitely do a backup. And then you need to take it to a reputable dealer, have them take a look at it, and make sure that it gets installed correctly this time so that Windows 10 can properly update. Is that semi-clear? Hello?
I tended to go to the worst-case scenario, but that you're substantiating what I thought I had to do. This is... I have tried to work with these offshore people. It's horrific.
Bring it to a local dealer.
And it... this was my last attempt before I brought it into somebody that could do this and is certified. I thank you.
Sorry about that.
Yes, and happy Thanksgiving to you all. It's a great show. Appreciate it.
Well, you too. Thank you so much. We love to hear that. Thanks. Yeah, unfortunately, that's sometimes the issue is we can't deal with it here. Over the phone stuff, we can certainly point you in the right direction. But we can't necessarily make anything happen. But we're happy to at least give it a try. So that's where we stand with that. It's too bad. Speaking of Chromebooks, by the way, it just came into my head earlier. Last week or the week before, I mentioned that during a break, I updated my Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
And several people... accuse me of lying. No computer will upgrade that quickly. Well, here's the way Chromebooks work. They update in the background while you're doing whatever you're doing, and then you get a little notice in the
lower right-hand corner
there, the little notice area, that basically says reboot now.
Yep.
And when you reboot, it just loads the new operating system. And since a reboot takes about 10 seconds, on a Chromebook. Yes, I honestly did update my entire operating system during a break, and I'm not lying about it. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, I checked on mine. Mine's still waiting as far as getting the Android apps.
Yeah.
Because I double-checked it, and they go, yeah, that's still in the planning stages. But, you know, at least it's still coming. They're making strides.
I'm still saving my pennies, and come January, when all the sales are on, I'm going to go look at a new Chromebook for me.
Well, right now you got a printer coming.
I do. I have a 3D printer coming. That's probably also not going to come till January.
Have they charged your credit card yet?
Yes.
Okay, so that's close.
Yes. Yes, very close. They say they're, you know, they've been saying all along shipping in December, and in the forum I've been reminding people that shipping from China in December means you get it in January.
And December 31st is still December.
It's still December. Even if they do it December 1st, by the time it gets to America, it's caught in Christmas rush. And I won't see it till January. And I'm okay with that because I knew from the beginning that shipping in December meant getting in January.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're shipping it from Buffalo. Yeah. They're shipping it from Shenzhen, China.
Even California.
Right.
They got to literally put it on that slow boat.
Right. It's exactly what's happening. So, I'm not expecting to see that until January. So I'll have a new Chromebook and a new 3D printer all at the same time. I'm very excited. Going to be and hopefully I'll be teaching in January. So it's going to be a very full month for me. It's going to be whole like I was working all.
Are you glad you retired?
Yeah,
how's that going?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I actually took much of this week off. I just decided I needed a little mental health week, and I took it.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
So it was very nice.
Once in a while, you gotta.
You're a little less curmudgeonly this week now?
No. That has nothing to do with what in fact I took off. I'm just, I'm a little clearer in my curmudgeonliness. Ah. Is how that works.
The delegation is pointed out in different directions.
All right. Well, I should probably read the next news thing. On Thursday, Apple released iOS 11.1.2 for the iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. Apple did not release any iOS 11.1.2 betas to developers or the public before it was rolled out. As iOS 11.1.2 is a minor point release, Apple did not add any major features to this update. Apple is currently in the process of testing iOS 11.2 in beta, as opposed to 11.1.2, which was what we had this time, which is expected to support Apple Pay, Cash, and Siri Kit for the HomePod. Of course, HomePod was delayed as well until next year with limited third-party developer support. And so traveling backwards in time, iOS 11.1.1 contained a fix for the keyboard autocorrect problem that caused the letter I to be converted to an A with a question mark symbol next to it, and a fix for a problem that caused Hey Siri to stop working. iOS 11.1 included over 70 new emoji and has brought back and it brought back the 3D multitasking gesture. iOS 11.1 also included bug fixes where live photo effects played back slowly and a problem that caused mail notifications to reappear on the lock screen. iOS 11.0.3 fixed a bug that caused the audio and haptic feedback to become dysfunctional on a number of iPhone 7 and 7 Plus devices. And iOS 11.0.3 also fixed an issue which caused touch input to become unresponsive on some iPhone 6S displays that were not serviced with genuine Apple parts. iOS 11.0.2 contained fixes for bugs that caused crackling noises in the iPhone 8 earpiece, a bug that caused attachments and SMIME encrypted emails to not be able to open, and a bug that prevented photos from appearing on certain devices. iOS 11.0.1 fixed a bug that caused synchronization issues in Outlook.com, Office 365, and Exchange Server 2016, running on Windows Server 2016 and Apple Mail. It also had performance improvements for iMessage app Drawer, Springboard, and App Explorer. The big iOS 11 release on September 19th brought many new features. The new features in iOS 11 include Do Not Disturb While Driving, which is excellent, new Files app, document scanning in the Notes app, the App Drawer, Customized Control Center, Indoor Airport and Mall maps, lane guidance in the Maps app, etc. iPad multitasking tools, let's not forget those. In this update's release notes, Apple said that iOS 11.1.2 fixed two issues. First issue is a bug that causes the iPhone X screen to become temporarily unresponsive to touch after a rapid decrease in temperature. It gets cold, your iPhone stops working.
Well, they only tested it in California.
Exactly. And the second issue is a bug that causes distortion in live photos and videos captured with the iPhone 10. Apple confirmed the iPhone 10 temperature problem about a week ago. So, are you happy with your iPhone 10 updates? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I got to say, this litany of fixes over the last month and a half, with 3 4-point releases and about 15, 20 fixes, are causing at least some people to ask, is Apple losing quality control?
And a lot of it, we've also think, is the sort of forced expectation that new phones come in September from Apple. Every other company releases the phone when they want to, whenever
right.
it's ready. Apple, we've come to expect September. In fact, everyone is really mad that the iPhone 10 was November. Yeah. So there's an expectation that it's coming out, which also then implies the new OS is coming out for the new phone.
Right.
And we think it's you know, maybe
they just weren't ready.
They just weren't ready yet, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's too much going on, and yeah.
It's
hard to hire more
to say not yet.
Yeah. And it is hard to hire more programmers, cause, you know, sometimes that doesn't help, and in fact many times that can hurt.
That can hurt.
Yeah.
Too many cooks, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But the fact is that because they have forced themselves to stick to this artificial deadline,
yeah.
they have caused themselves some trouble. And that's too bad. They ought to have the guts to stop and say, you know what, not yet, get over yourself. But the other thing, of course, is that the way Apple does its finances, this is their first quarter.
Right.
And so they want to start out because, remember, you are not Apple's customer. The shareholder is Apple's customer. You are the product. Your money is the product they bring to that customer. And so they need to keep their customers happy. And the way they do that is by having a kick-ass first quarter every year. And the way they do that is by making you buy a new iPhone. Whether it works or not is not as essential as the fact that you bought one. I'm sorry, but that's the way any publicly traded company thinks. They keep their shareholders happy, and the way they do that is by taking money from customers and giving it to the shareholders.
Although I think Apple is probably a little more customer-centric than other companies are.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm not saying that they aren't. What I'm saying is that we all need to be realistic about any publicly traded company, whether it's Apple or Microsoft or Google or anybody at all. The reality is that we are not the customer.
One of the things that Apple did do is they slowed down on the major releases of OSs, both macOS and iOS. It used to be 18 to 24 months between OSs.
Right.
They sped it up to every year, but they said, and this may be where it fell down, they're not going to be doing as much every year to make a huge number of changes. There's a new OS every year, but it's not the massive number of changes, so that should make the upgrades easier. And I think what they're trying to do is they are making too many changes every year, and the new OS that's expected every year is causing people problems, and a lot of people don't upgrade. In fact, the customer I was telling you about earlier was still running OS 8, missed 9, 10, and the early 11s. and because we have these new things every year, people don't like upgrading to make things look different. And every major OS, and iOS 11 no exception, it looks a lot different. And I can see the design goals, and as a new user, it makes sense. But as a longtime user, they changed everything, and we hate that.
Right, right, right. We see that a lot in any other, Windows 7 to Windows 8.
Yep. Everyone has a touchscreen, right?
No. Right.
No, they don't.
Exactly. And everyone loves these bricks in the middle of the screen. No, no, we don't. But in, we see it with that. We see it with people, manufacturers who change the Google Android face by adding their own launcher over the top of it. We see that all the time with these things. Even Google itself has changed both a little bit, at least, of the look of Android and the look of Chrome OS as they update things. We went from square to round, rounder, at least, bless you, rounder icons and things like that. So there's a lot of little subtle changes that are really designed to make the thing easier to use and easier to see and more obvious to play with. But people who are used to the old way get very flustered sometimes. We've all got stories of a new update comes out and it changes a color and people don't know how to find anything anymore on their desktops. It's just everything is now different.
Everything is different because it changed from light blue to dark blue.
Right, right. And I get that. I do. All right, listen, you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't worry. For those of you who don't learn from their past mistakes, and heaven knows that's all of us, we're going to give you another chance to do it. If you just hang on, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of Dave Enright, of Steve Ray, of me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we remain member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to Sound Bites, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Very exciting.
And we may have our technical difficulties a little under control.
We at least under control, not solved, but possibly under control.
No guarantee.
Yeah. Mozilla has been working on a major overhaul of its Firefox browser. And with the general release of Firefox 57 on Tuesday, has reached a major milestone.
It looks pretty cool. Yeah.
The new version of the browser has a sleek new interface and under the hood major performance enhancements, with Mozilla claiming that it's as much as twice as fast as it was a year ago. Not only should it be faster to load and render pages, but its user interface should remain quick and responsive even under heavy load with hundreds of tabs. If you have hundreds of tabs open, please seek help immediately. Turn off your computer, go find a field full of dandelions, and just sit, lie on your back, and watch the clouds go by for a while. Collectively, the performance work being done to modernize Firefox is called Project Quantum. The short version is Microsoft is rebuilding core parts of the browser, such as how it handles CSS style sheets, how it draws pages on screen, and how it uses the GPU. This work is being motivated by a few things. First, the web has changed since many parts of Firefox were initially designed and developed. Pages are more dynamic in structure, and applications are richer and more graphically intense. JavaScript is also more complex and difficult to debug. Second, computers now have many cores and simultaneous threads, giving them much greater scope to work in parallel, and security remains a pressing concern, prompting the use of new techniques to protect against exploits. Some of the rebuilt portions are even using Mozilla's new Rust programming language, which is designed to offer improved security compared to C++. While this release represents a major step forward in the browser's performance and reliability, work on Quantum continues. One major weakness of Firefox relative to Chrome and Edge is its use of sandboxing and process isolation to limit the impact that security flaws can have. Next year, Mozilla will be working to improve these areas. Early next year should also see the rollout of a new GPU-accelerated rendering engine. One of the things that people are complaining most about, of course, is that Quantum has killed, or broken, I should say, most of their add-ons.
Yeah.
And that's a problem people are having.
My color tabs went totally black.
Yeah, gone. Yep. Yeah. So are you interested in Firefox Quantum? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
I mean, it looks very nice, but I'm still, it's been so long, I've gotten more hooked on Chrome.
Yep. Well, also, those square tabs are kind of very 90s to me.
Well, see, here, the one thing that I like, I'm sticking with Chrome, is one, I use Google Mail.
Sure.
So, and with the Chrome browser, by using, you know, places where I go and put in passwords and it saves it, that's being backed up with Google Chrome.
Right, so you can get it on your Chromebook, on your desktop, on your phone.
It doesn't matter where I am, and even if my computer dies, oh, no big deal. Say I'm logging into, say, RG&E or, you know,
right.
Frontier or whatever. It remembers your username and password.
Right.
And it saves it in there.
And
I don't have to make a long
machine
list.
Right.
Love it.
Yeah, and there are lots and lots of add-ons that were broke. Well, Steve is seeing that problem right now, as a matter of fact. We upgraded the version of WordPress that runs that Soundbites runs on, and the Soundbites website runs on, and it killed Press This.
Well, the JavaScript booklet, a bookmarklet, has changed, and apparently, according to the author, that's because bookmarklets were popular 7-8 years ago, and now we're old tech, so we're not using them. It worked just fine.
It worked fine, and you enjoyed using it, and you used it every day.
And it was easy to use, yeah, now that they've made
and
it
and apparently
harder.
Lots of people have been using it,
yep.
Just because he doesn't use it anymore.
Yeah, an opinion of one.
Right, exactly.
They're saying it's under 2%, 0.2% of their requests, because everything was working fine, we didn't need any help on it.
Right, exactly. Just, you know,
why would you get requests if something is working fine?
Yeah. Right. People say often, you know, that I and my radio, my newspaper column here on the radio show, we don't answer a lot of Mac questions. And I always say, well, it's one of two reasons. Either nobody's using a Mac or nobody's having a problem with a Mac. Which do you think it is?
Yeah. One of the two.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, you know.
Yeah, it's simple.
Yes, fewer people use Macs than use Windows. But in terms of percentage, more people have problems with Windows than they have with Macs. So.
We've heard studies and reports from Microsoft that, you know, Microsoft Office runs on Mac and Windows. In fact, the joke is it was on Mac before there was a Windows.
Right.
Microsoft makes more money on their Mac versions than they do on their Windows versions, even though the sales are so much lower, because the support costs on Windows are so high.
Right.
And there was a joke about the Word couch, that if you're on the Microsoft Word help desk and someone calls in with a Word problem, you can go lay down on the couch for half an hour to solve their problem. And one of the early problems was always mail merge. No one knew how to do mail merge.
Nobody knew how to do mail merge.
And pretty much mail merge has gone away now.
Pretty much.
Well, we use commercial programs now to do mail merge. and so the one thing we heard was kind of neat is that the time, the support time was billed back to the development team.
Oh,
so
interesting.
If it took so long to help people with mail merge, then the team that wrote mail merge must not have done a very good job and fix it.
I can't disagree with that, yeah. Really.
But mail merge hasn't really changed over the years. It's just it's like this guy with the WordPress bookmark.
Well, people now
send
out,
using it.
People send out email rather than mail.
Yep. Nope. No, we don't do postal mail merge anymore. We do email merge.
And it's much easier to personalize, and by personalize I mean not actually personal at all. They're just throwing your name in there. It's much easier to personalize email than it is to personalize mail.
Yeah. Dear first name, how is the weather in city?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, it's a tough thing. Oh, I wanted to point out something people have not noticed, apparently, because sometimes get calls about this too. People say, I have a Google Home, or I have an Alexa, and can I listen to your show on that? And the answer has always been yes. And in fact, if you scroll down on the right of soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y. Francis insists on us reminding you every time we say it. Doggone you, Francis. Just above.
She's so demanding.
Right. Just above Please Help, where you can always donate to keep the site alive. That is not the donation for Jazz 90.1. This is a separate donation. But just above that, you can see what you say to a Google Home or what you say to an Alexa device to play the station. And if you do that at 11 a.m. every Saturday, you'll hear us. So, but then during the rest of the week, of course, you can hear the greatest jazz you will hear on a local station with local DJs who actually are there and will talk to you and will give you legit information about the weather and the news and everything else. And it's real easy to do, and it works pretty dang perfectly, as a matter of fact. Most of it, I think, is probably coming out of iTunes, maybe. I don't know exactly where it comes from. But it worked for both of my devices. You may have to add the iTunes skill to your device. But if you're a music person at all, you've probably already done that anyway, so that's fine. But that's just a little extra thing we wanted to point out to people and remind them that if it's possible to get this station, if it's possible to get a station, it's possible to get this station. So we thought we would make sure that you knew that. I want to read about Asgardia. Asgardia!
Did they survive Ragnarok?
Yeah, right. No spoilers. The world's first space nation has taken flight. On November 12th, Asgardia cemented its presence in outer space by launching the Asgardia 1 satellite. The nanosat, it's roughly the size of a loaf of bread, undertook a two-day journey from NASA's Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia. Why you would name a flight facility Wallops, I'm not sure.
That was the name of the island.
I'm not sure I get the... What?
I think that was the name of the island they're on.
Yeah. I'm not sure that the karma there is a good one. But it undertook a two-day journey from NASA's Wallops Flight Facility in Virginia to the International Space Station, or, of course, ISS. It contains half a terabyte of data belonging to 18,000 of Asgardia's citizens, such as family photographs as well as digital representations of the space nation's flag, coat of arms, and constitution. Russian scientist Dr. Igor Ashurbeyli founded the world's first independent nation to operate in outer space in October of 2016. Named after a Norse mythological city of the skies, Asgardia is free to join, and so far, about 114,000 people have signed up. Ashurbeyli says the project's mission is to provide a peaceful society, offer easier access to space technologies, and protect Earth from space threats, such as asteroids and man-made debris in space. While Asgardia's citizens will, for the time being, remain based on Earth, the satellite launch brings the nation one step closer to space. Citizens' data will remain in orbit for between 5 and 18 months, the typical lifespan of this type of satellite, and will then burn out and disappear. For Ashurbeyli, the launch fulfills a pledge he made when establishing the space nation to take its citizens to space via their data. I promised there would be a launch, he said. We selected NASA as a reliable partner because we have to meet the commitments that I made 13 months ago. Although he probably said that either with a Russian accent or in Russian. Within 40 hours of the project being announced in 2016, over 100,000 people had applied for citizenship on Asgardia's website. After 3 weeks, Asgardia had 500,000 applicants. Anyone over 18 years old with an email address, regardless of gender, race, nationality, religion, and financial standing, can apply for citizenship, including ex-convicts, provided they are clear of charges at the time of application. Today, there are 114,000 Asgardians from 204 countries, which, by the way, is a population drop from 211,000 in June, when voting to determine the details of Asgardia's constitution began. Only those who agreed to adopt the finalized constitution are counted as Asgardians. Turkey currently has the largest number of Asgardians, with over 16,500 residents. After the launch of its first satellite, Asgardia plans to send a series of them into space. Going forward, the Asgardia team hopes to create habitable platforms in low Earth orbits. The first one located 100 to 200 miles from space, which is also where the ISS is located. In the same orbit, not next to it. The first human flight to this location is projected to take place in 8 years' time. We want to give equal opportunities to everyone who has a mind who can do something for their protection, Asher Bailey said. Our real home is not the house or the city where we were born. Our home is planet Earth, and we want to protect it. Further satellite launches are in the works, but no dates have yet been confirmed. Ready to be an Asgardian? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And Wallops Island was originally known as Kagatunk Island by the natives.
Sure.
Chartered by John Wallop in 1692.
There you go.
So
Wallops Island.
Wallops Island, yep.
But now here's the question. Are members of Asgardia called the Aesir?
Asgardians? Maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. The Aesir is the race that Odin and Thor and Loki, well, not Loki, he's an ice giant, but all the others came from. And they simply live on Asgard. So calling them Asgardians is like calling you a New Yorker. It's where you're from. But what you are is a human being. They are the Aesir, and they live on... Sorry, I grew up reading bullfinches.
I'm a Terran.
Exactly. I'm a Terran. I grew up reading bullfinches, so I'm steeped in the mythologies and understanding what that stuff is about. But I think it's pretty cool, the basic idea being that you will be able to take your data and have it shot into space.
And they're holding parliamentary elections now, so you can nominate yourself for parliament.
That's right. And you can have dual citizenship. They do not demand that you relinquish your citizenship in whatever country you currently have. And so while you look up Asgardia, Steve's going to put the link online, assuming he can figure out how to work the thing now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We've got Dennis from Rochester waiting patiently on the line, and we'll take him as soon as we get back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Dennis?
Hi, guys. For what it's worth, first, earlier you were, whenever either of you or any of you were on the phone, you were over-modulating something terrible, distorting, could almost hardly understand what you were saying.
Okay,
when
thanks.
When you're not on the phone, you're okay.
Yep.
Thanks. And is it all right now, or is it the same?
Well, it's overdriving.
Yeah, it's overdriving us and underdriving the caller.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly, you're exactly right. What I did want to ask is about, I made a note to myself about a week ago about two browsers that I've never heard of in my life, but then I forgot the specifics of them, so I'm just going to ask you about them and tell me your thoughts, opinions, and then I'm going to take my answer, I'll hang up and take my answer over the air.
Sure.
Ice Dragon by Komodo.
Right.
And Vivaldi.
Right.
So I'm going to hang up and I'll take my answer over the air.
All right. Yeah, that's not a problem. Well, in general, everybody's got a web browser. Okay. Okay.
You almost think, why would they bother with you know, Firefox and Chrome and...
Well, Vivaldi, for example, says, it's your web. Surf it the way you want.
And Komodo says it's 877. Secure.
Oh. The cure for...
It's secure. It's a secure browser.
Yeah.
Well, okay, your browser's secure, but the websites you go to aren't.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's... Yeah, exactly. one of the things that makes a person want to create a web browser is they don't feel that the current web browsers scratch a particular itch they may have, whether it's security or it's ease of use or it's whatever, whatever. And so that's the kind of thing that they're talking about. Now, the Vivaldi web browser has many of the typical things you see before: speed dials, quick commands. It has a thing called rewind. So if you've wended your way deep into a site, hitting the rewind button takes you back to the top page. Well, the first page that you entered at that site.
Instead of hitting back.
Right. Or yeah. Instead of just deleting out all the parts of the URL. And while many browsers have something called a speed dial, Vivaldi also has a speed dial folder thing. So you can organize your essentially bookmarks into folders. So that's nice. There's a fast forward, and it has side panels, and you can take notes while you're browsing. And again, just a bunch of things that it'll stack your just a bunch of things that it feels are not done well in the current set of browsers, and believes that it can do better. And that's the whole deal. I believe it's only available for Windows. And it is at version 1.1.2 right now. So it's free. So if you want to give it a shot.
One of them had Vivaldi had the Mac, had a Mac version, and Ice Dragon did not. One way or the other.
Well, I didn't see that there, but the Ice Dragon browser, I suspect is a.
Vivaldi is Mac.
Oh, Vivaldi does have a Mac version. Okay.
Well, it knows I'm on a Mac. I'll say it. It doesn't know what you're on, so it didn't tell you what.
Right. It just told me Windows. Yeah. Okay, I get that.
A lot of websites do that. If you're not on a Mac, they assume Windows.
Right. Komodo is based on Firefox, and again, it's one of those deals that's basically free. The Firefox web browser is based on open source technology, so it can take the base code of Firefox, not an exact replica of Firefox, but the base code of Firefox, and make a clone, essentially. And what these people talk about is super fast page loading, an integrated DNS service, privacy enhancements, performance enhancements, compatibility with Firefox plugins. So for those of you who are unhappy with the fact that Quantum killed most of your plugins, maybe they would work under Ice Dragon. And the other thing is the various Ice products, from Komodo were originally designed specifically. Many of them for Windows. I seem to have done something bad. There we go. It did something bad. Ice Dragon, Ice, various ices were originally designed back in the day when Linux was remaining pure. That is to say, it didn't have any proprietary anything in it. Of course, you can still get versions of Linux that are that way. But many of the browsers in the day had proprietary elements or were entirely proprietary. So they took the generic open source version of Firefox and made their own. You can get an email program based on Thunderbird, and also the browser based on Firefox that are completely unencumbered by any sort of proprietary anything, so that if you're one of the purists, like Richard Stallman, who runs only 100% pure unadulterated Linux, you can do that with these products. And because because Firefox and the Chromium browser on which Chrome is based are open source and free for anyone to use, as long as they also make available the source code, lots of companies have taken them and done tweaks to them to either give away or sell as their own. And with many of these, what you'll find is they have a free version that you can then download for free. But then at some point, if you want X, they will charge you for that. Or if you want support, of course, they will charge you for that. And so that's the business model. That's how they make money. And that's the deal. That's the whole deal with products like Ice Dragon and Vivaldi. Both very nice, but there are lots of other, you know, Opera is a web browser. You know, you've got Edge and Chrome and Safari and Firefox and now Quantum and Ice Dragon and Vivaldi and the one that starts with an M. The other one that starts with an M.
What's that website that lists all your browsers? Browser Watch?
Probably Browser Watch.
Oh, that's info on all the browsers.
Yeah, but anyway, there's just a bucket load of them. They all have various thises and thats and whatever it is you think you'd like in a browser you can find from there.
Wikipedia has a list.
Yeah, Wikipedia always has a list of everything. The download has been downloaded. Thank you so much. Can I show it in the folder? I can. So, saying cancel when I accidentally hit the download for Ice Dragon didn't do a thing. Huh, I didn't like that. Okay. It's not there.
I had to scroll like 6 pages to go through the list of all the browsers that there are.
Yeah, there's a bucket load of them, like I said.
Yep.
Go to the M's. There's an M one that I know.
Well, this is
Midori. That's the one.
This was broken down by engine. So first you have to pick which of the dozen engines you're going to use.
Right.
And then within the engine, you've got dozens of browsers based on each engine.
Right. And each engine does something slightly different. And then each browser within that engine does something slightly different. So again, it's, you know, I like this, except it doesn't do this.
Yep.
Or I don't like the way it does that. And so I can take the code, change it myself, put out a whole new browser, I win.
And that's the way computers used to be, when they started in Linux and DOS and the Unixes, that, you know, if you don't like it, you write your own.
Right, and people still do it. That's Linux.
That's Linux.
That's why there are so many millions of programs available free under Linux. People had an itch, they scratched it, they gave it to everybody else who might have that itch, everybody wins.
I like that Goanna was a fork of Gecko.
Yeah. Goanna.
Goanna is a very large lizard.
Yes, it is.
A very tiny lizard.
It's a very poisonous lizard, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Everything in Australia tries to kill you, so whether or not it's poisonous or it's just going to eat your leg is...
It's carnivorous.
Pretty much
it's
standard.
It's carnivorous, yeah, of course it is.
Yep.
It's the same idea. You can find lots and lots of browsers, lots and lots of... web browsers that meet your personal needs. Now, of course, by the time you've researched them all, it's probably they're all going to change.
Yeah, the minute you get used to one, it'll turn around and change for something else.
Right.
The pygmy Goanna is only the size of your arm.
Oh, that's not so bad then. There you go. But things like Midori are designed specifically to be very, very lightweight. Dolphin is another one designed to be very, very lightweight. If you're a complete purist under either Linux or Windows, and I don't know if it runs on the Mac, it must run on the Mac as well, you can run a browser called Lynx, either L-I-N-K-S or L-Y-N-X. And it is a command line-based browser. It is a text-based browser. And you can still do lots and lots of stuff with it. But if you want a browser that's really fast and really not prone to getting most viruses, downloadable through it. You want something like Lynx.
It is the oldest browser still in use.
Yep.
Having been written in 1992.
Yep. Yep.
And a lot of times the lightweight browsers are designed for computers with slower processors and less RAM, because your web browsing generally takes up gobs of RAM.
Right. So one of the things that you can do is if you have a very old computer with very little RAM and a very slow processor, you can load either Puppy Linux or Damn Small Linux and run it on that old machine. But the problem with both of those is, as Steve said, any modern browser uses just way too much RAM that you don't have anymore or whatever. So both of them use lightweight browsers. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Gates, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up? Mike, you there? Hello? Mike?
Hi.
Maybe, oh, there he was.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to find out how you like the new desktop for Windows.
I'm sorry, what did he say?
The new desktop? Which new desktop?
They changed the desktop for on Windows just on the last update on one of my drives.
Do you mean the
pit? No more. You have to hit a button on the left-hand side to get into the what's on the computer. There's nothing on the, and the only site for that is one of the virus things.
You can put anything you want on your desktop.
So are you not seeing any desktop at all? Is that what that is?
Yeah, no desktop. We got a more a couple of places on the left-hand side, up the left-hand side you have to hit to get the desktop or get the anything on the computer.
I think you may have turned on tablet mode, so it thinks you're on a tablet, so you slide in and out to see everything on the desktop.
Oh, okay. Well, check that out then.
Let me see. I got to find where to turn that off. Yeah, because the desktop didn't change. You can put anything you want on the desktop, and they have cut back on like the My Computer icon isn't there by default, but you can put it there, and you can copy folders to the desktop. You can make folders on the desktop. That hasn't changed. There is a tablet mode that it can switch into to just give you big program icons like you were running on a tablet.
Okay.
Here we go, show desktop icons.
Mm-hmm.
You go to your start menu, and we'll post this link. Start menu settings, personalization, themes, desktop icons.
Uh-huh.
And you can turn on all those desktop icons again.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
So there's an example. Something changed, and it's radically different, and we're very annoyed by it.
Yes, we are.
That's where I still like using the one program, Classic Menus.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't help here.
No.
That's an entirely different thing. But yes.
Well, so many folks don't like that, you know, because of the windows and all those little panels and everything else. And the number of folks that I have installed Classic Menu on is unbelievable because, you know, there was no need to change it back to a tablet because it's not a tablet. It's their desktop.
Right. Well, that's the real issue, which is that sometimes Windows goes into tablet mode. If you have a computer that is flippable, so you could take the screen and wrap it all the way around the back and turn it into a tablet, the theory is it goes into tablet mode automatically. But the theory is also that when you undo that, it's supposed to come out of tablet mode. And if it doesn't, then you've got a problem. We're going to take another quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Well, Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I don't know which of these I like more.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to read this one. So, you've heard of the Amazon Key?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is the thing that will, you get a camera in your house. This is all from Amazon.
You pay for it.
You get a camera in your house, and then you put a Amazon key lock on your door. And when Amazon delivers a package, the package deliverer can walk right in and put it right in your house. And then, of course, the theory is they walk right back out again and relock your door.
Because they know they're on camera, they won't do anything bad.
Right. Well, security research firm Rhino Security Labs found a vulnerability. I know you're shocked.
In a service that hasn't really been rolled out yet.
I hope those of you who are driving did not have an accident when they heard that. In the Amazon Key in-home delivery services security procedures that could allow either the courier or even a savvy and malicious bystander to enter your home undetected after delivery is completed. Amazon has promised to change how Key works in order to make it easier for you to tell when something unusual is happening. But the changes proposed by Amazon don't necessarily resolve the vulnerability. It's that security monitor thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't fix the problem. We just let you know there is a problem. Thanks a bucket load, Junior.
There is a problem.
There is a problem, exactly. Amazon Key is available to Amazon customers who have bought and installed Amazon's own cloud cam security camera and installed it at their front door. If you're one of those customers, you can select in-home delivery as a delivery method. When purchasing something on Amazon, Amazon couriers can then authenticate themselves with your cloud cam to unlock the door and enter your home to leave the package. However, they can only do this at a home into which they're assigned to make a delivery and only at the scheduled time. They are recorded by your security camera as they make the delivery, and they must lock the door when they leave. Amazon also tracks which courier is assigned to the delivery, and only that courier has access.
Which is, it's kind of handy if you've got a problem with packages disappearing from your porch.
Right. And that really is the problem this is trying to solve. And for people who cannot, who are elderly or whatever, and cannot lift a package into their home.
Right. Can't get to the door in time, maybe.
Right, or, you know, it's a heavy package and they can't bring it in.
How many TV show memes have there been where someone's sitting at the door waiting all day long, and that 30 seconds they run to the bathroom, there's a missed you delivery tag.
Yep, exactly right. Rhino Labs discovered that a courier equipped with a simple program can use their laptop to fake a command from your Wi-Fi router to disconnect Cloud Cam from your network. This causes the camera to stop functioning by freezing the image at the last frame. We've seen this in a million movies as well. At that point, the courier could re-enter your home, do whatever it is they want there, and then exit, reactivating the camera, locking the door as usual. This re-entry would be undetectable by the resident and would appear like a normal delivery in Amazon's data. In theory, a bystander could also do this as a courier is leaving, but this is less likely for a few reasons. First, the bystander would have to know that delivery was scheduled and that it was to be an in-home delivery. The second, they'd have to do it before the courier locked the door. But a hack prevents the door from locking, and the courier is instructed not to leave until they've locked up. Anyway, camera functionality is a critical part of Amazon's security pitch for Key. The company issued the following statement in response to reports about this issue. We currently notify customers if the camera is offline for an extended period. Later this week, an extended period. 20 minutes ago, you got right. We're a security monitor. Later this week, we will deploy an update to more quickly provide notifications if the camera goes offline during delivery. This could help Amazon Key customers know when something is amiss, but it doesn't prevent the event from happening to begin with. Of course, the Amazon courier would likely be the prime suspect if a robbery or other crime is discovered, but small thefts might not be noticed soon enough to correlate them with the delivery. Customers and lawyers had already raised concerns about using Amazon Key before Rhino Labs discovered this camera flaw. Rhino Labs founder Ben Caudill said that fully fixing the loophole would need to involve caching video locally, even if the camera is disconnected from the network. The Cloud Cam doesn't currently cache video locally. So, are you still interested in the Amazon Key? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
We've seen videos on the internet from people that have had packages stolen frequently. Will end up putting a video camera on their porch, and you can sometimes watch the delivery guy come deliver a package, and another vehicle just following the delivery guy comes and steals the package. And quite often, you'll be able to see them steal the one from across the street, too, or the one from next door, as the delivery people go down the... I went the other way that time.
Yeah.
As the delivery people go down the street, the bad guys are just following behind them, stealing all the packages.
My favorite one is a guy who put a fake package on his doorstep, and when it got opened, it was a glitter bomb. And you see the guy grab the package... get in the car and in the passenger seat, so there's somebody else driving, which makes it faster to steal, right? So he grabs the thing and he goes and gets about halfway down the street, and then suddenly it jams on the brake. The door opens. Both guys get out, and they're waving their arms.
Cool.
Very funny.
With some dog poop at the bottom, I hope.
I hope so.
Stink bomb. Yeah.
Aerosolized.
Aerosol. Weaponized dog poop. Yeah. Just the phrase sends a chill up my spine. when you've got two very large dogs, the phrase weaponized dog poop means something.
Yeah.
To you. So, yeah.
It's been done before, 2009.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
I saw it on YouTube.
Nothing new, it's just
weaponized dog poop. Yeah. That's been done before.
It's been done before.
Well, yeah, Hannibal and his elephants. He had a lot of after elephant used elephant feed.
What, and quit show business? You know that joke.
No.
They follow the guy.
Oh yeah.
They ask the guy who follows the circus parade, who's pushing the broom and sweeping up all the elephant poop. He says, "What? And why don't you quit this job?" He said, "What? Give up show business?"
Yeah, really?
Boom, boom. So, yeah.
Try the veal. I'm going to get an 11.
Right, exactly. Right.
No, that's a weaponized poop.
There's a weaponized poop, yeah.
Emoji poop.
Right. But, there are some things, and I get it. I get what they're trying to do. As Steve said, lots of people are finding that their Amazon purchases are being stolen, particularly at this time of year.
Because they come in that nice box that says Amazon.
It says Amazon on it. That's exactly right. If it said human waste, maybe people wouldn't necessarily.
So they need to make an over box that's all beat up and cut and crushed, and then an inner box that's real.
Yeah, exactly. But I understand that there are people who have that problem and that they get stolen because people have to work. I've noticed that as well, those of you who still do so.
And a lot of people try to deliver their stuff at work.
Right.
In a small office, that might be okay.
That might be. It depends on the office.
A little tough on a large office.
Yeah. Right. But at any rate, the point here is that I get the thing they're doing and I get why they're doing it. The problem is this is not really a solution as such. This is, I don't know what to call this, but it's not a good solution. It doesn't make sense to me that letting a total stranger who's honestly, look, I've known many, many UPS drivers over the years. Every single one of them was a responsible, respectable, upstanding human being. And I liked each and every one of the ones I met. But I still don't know who that is coming to my door. And right. It may not be the UPS guy.
Oh, and that's one of the limitations of the Amazon Key service now, is it's only in cities where Amazon directly hires the courier.
Right.
And theoretically, they're vetted and everything. But, yeah, apparently it's very easy to go to a costume shop and rent a delivery costume.
Yeah. Or make your own.
Yeah.
Not hard at all. So there's a lot of issues, I think, at this point in time with something like that, and until we can order something through the replicator, and then of course it wouldn't necessarily the Amazon replicator. That'll be the next, that'll be the next big thing. Earl Grey hot. That'll be 25 cents, please, if you return the cup.
Yeah.
So, basically, I don't see this as a tremendously useful idea. I just don't. I don't get it. I do personally want to let anybody into my house.
I do know some businesses, small businesses, that have a postal approved lockbox. So bigger than like a mailbox at your house, the post office has a key to open it, put your package in, and close it.
Right. And that makes sense to me. That's not letting someone into your home. Yeah.
I remember reading in a sci-fi story where when transporters and teleporters first became popular, it was all the rage for rich people to have a transport receiver in their foyer.
Right.
Until the bad guys started random dialing.
Right, and just walking in your house.
So now you put the receiver outside your foyer.
Well, or you have a foyer that has a second lock, a different lock, a man trap.
Which was common in your old house. You've got one.
All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to everybody who called in. To those of you who called in at the absolute last moment, I'm sorry we didn't get to you. You got to call earlier. But we'll be back next week. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show of the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.